Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Chris Spears, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right. Woohoo! We've got another guest host here today. This is Chris, who we'll introduce him in a second. But first, more important thing, of course, because it's all about me. You need to know how to get a hold of us. You can go to fatguysatthemovies.com and search our whole family of podcasts. We've got a bunch of things up there. You can go to iTunes. Just search Fat Guys of the Movies, and my fat face will show up on the iTunes feed. Subscribe, like. Speaking of like, you can go to our Facebook page. You go to facebook.com/FGATM and like us. Not lick us. That's just gross. And you can get us on email. You can email us at fatguysatfilmschoolrejects.com. Or leave us a voicemail at 740-205-6456. No voicemails this week. Shame on all you people out there who are stopping doing voicemails. We had a good run there. But now, let's talk about Chris. Chris Spears.
Hello.
Tell us who you are and what you... Because you're new to the show.
I am
new to
the show,
We haven't had you on before.
Well, I think my name's Chris Spears.
You think your name? You think therefore you are?
I hope that's my name because that's what I told you. So at least that's what's on my underwear, right? So
I have not seen your underwear. I cannot verify that claim whatsoever.
Okay, well, that was a bad joke, and I'm full of those, so I hope that your listeners are in for a bad joke week.
I have very sophisticated listeners. Well, they listen to a show called Fat Guys of the Movies.
They are going
to
be bummed out then. Well, I am a guy. I'm also a fat guy, and I like to go to the movies. I was a co-host on the Imperial Holonet Radio podcast at IHNRadio.com. It was a podcast exclusively about Star Wars. That little movie that came out in 1977 that you might have heard about a couple of times.
That little independent film.
Yeah, a little independent film that, you know, kind of blew up, and then, you know, 20 years later everybody hates George Lucas for it.
Wow. Well, actually, we're going to talk a little bit more about that. That's one of the reasons I wanted to get you on the show is because this past weekend, but a couple weeks ago, I went to the 24-hour Ohio Science Fiction Film Marathon, and one of the movies they showed was The People versus George Lucas. And I had some thoughts on that, but I wanted to get a Star Wars expert on it. I guess, can we call you a Star Wars expert?
Yeah, you can go with expert. That's fine. Of course, anytime you discuss Star Wars and expert in the same sentence, you know you're going to have somebody who has another opinion that's just going to trash you completely.
You're going to have that one guy, that one nerdy kid from Iowa going, I didn't think so. Yeah, no, that's not true.
You know, the classic.
I'm 17, but I've watched all of them on VHS, which is the true way of watching it.
The original trilogy without Hayden Christensen at the end, yeah. Yeah, you've always got at least one guy. But you know what? We did that podcast for over 4 years. So I've been called many names. I've had many things lashed out at me for things I've said.
Have you been called a scruffy-looking nerf herder? Oh, that's the big question.
Many, many times. and we're not even talking about a podcast there. So.
that's your dating relationship.
Right. That's what my girlfriend calls me. She, you know, I wake up the morning, she's like, oh, my God, another scruffy-looking nerf herder.
Well, another?
Yeah. You know, we the dog and then me and then, you know, my daughter, she looks like a Wookiee and...
Wow. You have an eight-foot-tall hairy daughter. You better introduce her to Nair before she starts dating. That's
right,
all I have to say.
Right, exactly.
See, that's the danger. I know about Star Wars, too, so.
Oh, God, I'm screwed then.
Well, yeah, but I want to have... Actually, we met. What's interesting is Chris and I met. You were in line for The Clone Wars.
The Clone Wars, yes.
That the one non-high-grossing George Lucas Star Wars movie.
Well, yeah, it did pretty bad, and it was fun to stand out in line for those couple of days, you know, because we had people come in from North Carolina and New Jersey, you know, people that were listening to the show at the time, and it was great to get to meet people and hang out and, you know, just talk Star Wars for a couple of days non-straight, no distractions. But then you see the movie, you're like, okay, we kind of waited for that. You know,
well, it was that to defend that movie at least. That was just a pilot for the TV show,
right? And we knew that going in. So, and I mean, we weren't expecting Revenge of the Sith or anything like that. But at the same time, we're kind of like, yeah, okay. But I mean, in the end, you're with friends, you're chilling out, and you know, it's a good time.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. Cause that's how we met. And I was like, yeah, we should, you know, be on the show or something like that. And then for a long time, a couple of years, cause that came out in like 2008.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
And finally I'm like, oh, I better bring him on. Cause, I've been saying I've been doing it. And I waited so long. Your podcast really isn't.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we don't really record anymore. The last thing we did was a commentary for Empire. And I think that was in November, and we've kind of trailed off since then, but we will be trying to do something for the Blu-rays and for the 3D re-releases.
Did you do a commentary for the Star Wars Holiday Special?
In fact, we did.
And oh, you did?
Yes, we did. You can find that at ihnradio.com.
Oh, wow.
Or you can go to zaraband.com, and they have our commentary over there. And it probably is the worst hour and 45 minutes of your life multiplied many, many times over, because A, you're watching the holiday special. B, you're listening to the holiday special.
The holiday special is lovable.
Really?
Because it's got B. Arthur singing in the cantina. And
but the first 10 minutes are nothing but...
Yeah, it's just Wookiees talking to each other. That's what's so funny about it. I remember when that aired. Are you old enough to have seen that?
No, I was born in 79.
Oh, see, I saw that. I remember, because this is the thing, because there was that whole time when Lucas was denying it existed.
Right.
And I'm like, no, man, I saw it. I remember watching it. I remember because I was crazy about Star Wars. I was like 6.
Right.
And then they did it the next year, and I was like totally into it. And I at the time, when I was six, I thought it was fantastic.
Well, yeah, when you're 6, you know, crappy TV looks great. You're like, hey, it's more Star Wars before the next one comes out. And then you watch it 20 years later, you're like, oh my God, what was I thinking?
Well, but it's what I love about it is it's this bizarre social experiment of taking an ahead of its time movie and just putting it into a variety show format.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean the whole circus thing, that's what kind of creeps me out still when I watch it. Yes, I've just sat down and watched it, which is unheard of. But yeah. You know, when they do the circus ring act, and his name's Lumpy, when he's watching it, just creeps me out.
Not as creepy as when he's like, I don't know what he's doing to the Diane Carroll song.
Well, I don't know if that's appropriate for the radio. But.
we won't talk more about that. That was just aired on broadcast television.
Well, you know, it was a different time. It was, what, 1978?
78, yeah. The holiday of 78. And, I mean, so, yeah, I don't know. I find it just fascinating. It's just, it's fun to watch the same way, like, H.R. Puffin stuff is fun to watch.
That show creeps me out so bad.
Man, what were they thinking? Who was behind this?
Some people that were very, very high.
Yeah. Yeah. Although, you know what, I read an interview with them, and they made the point on, and they almost have a point here where they're like, we really weren't that high. We really weren't high because you can't, like, produce a television. It takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
And we just had some wacky stuff going on. I'm like, I don't know if I necessarily believe that. But anyways, we're going to talk a little bit about the X-Men movies because this is the week that X-Men First Class comes out. We're actually going to take some time to talk about the first couple X-Men movies, or the first, like, 4 of them they've made.
Yeah.
In this segment, but we'll just plop that onto the next segment because we're almost out of time here because we spent so much time talking about the cinema masterpiece known as the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Yay.
but anyways, so think about this, Chris. Your thoughts on the first 4 X-Men movies, and then we will, and we'll be back to talk about that.
Okay.
And welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. You are listening to Kevin and Chris this time.
Hello.
Chris from well, really just from his house.
Just, not, yeah, I'm in,
not
you know,
from a podcast anymore.
No, I'm from a random basement that used to be called Echo Basement when we did the show.
Ah, wow. Well, weren't you, but you were like recognized as like by somebody from something, weren't you? I mean, you were a pretty significant Star Wars podcast back in the day.
Back in the day, we were. Steve Sansweet had listened to the show a few times, and he recognized our names when we talked to him. Kyle Newman, the director of Fanboys, he listened to the show, and he was on the show a few times. Actually, we got to meet him, and that was a good time. So
better than his release of Fanboys.
yeah. But I mean, his wife is Jamie King, and she's pretty hot. So
she is pretty hot.
You know,
did you get to meet her?
No, unfortunately, we didn't. She didn't come to Columbus for the premiere, but you know, we sent her a greeting, and I'm sure that creeped them all out. And
I'm sure the picture of you guys naked with Jamie King pictures.
Not quite naked. That bad.
Will you sign my copy of Sin City? You're a prostitute.
Right. Actually, he and Jamie both sent us Fanboys DVDs that they both signed that we gave away on the show.
Oh, wow.
So that was pretty cool.
What'd she do? She was in it. Was she?
Yeah, she was.
Did she, like, just show up at one point?
Yeah, she was in the casino.
Oh, okay.
When Hutch and Linus and Zoe were at the craps table.
And okay. Yes. I remember her in that movie.
Yeah.
I would just completely blocked by the complete unrealistic Kristen Bell character of, I'm totally hot, but I've gotten glasses and I'm going to dress as Princess Leia. And I'm like, I've been to, nothing against fangirls out there, but generally, in at least. They usually don't look like Kristen Bell.
No, they don't. And that's one of my pet peeves is, you know, you've got these.
Although I do know some very attractive fangirls.
Oh, yes. I mean, we all do. We've all seen the pictures from celebrations or met them or, you know mm-hmm. them. But when you see these Hollywood actresses like, oh, I'm a geek because I like Star Wars and I wear a Star Wars shirt. It's like, shut up. No, you're not.
Like, I like Star Wars. You say, what's a Wookiee? And she's like,
I don't know. It's like, okay, what planet is Chewbacca from?
It's one thing if they spell it with too few Y's, but you should at least know what it is.
Right. You know, and I saw a picture of Megan Fox when they were doing Transformers 2. Yeah. And she was like, oh, I'm a big geek. I love Star Wars. You know, had this, you know, I think from the kids department at Sears, Star Wars shirt on.
I've seen that picture. Yeah.
Yeah. And everybody's like, oh, Megan Fox is a nerd. She's one of us. No, she's not.
No, she's not.
It's like, dude, if you went up to her and said, hi, I just want to get your autograph, she would look at you and probably spit on you, and you would love it.
Well, you probably would love it. But here's the other thing is if she were such a geek, I mean, she's tatted up more than Henry Rollins is.
Right.
Does she have a Star Wars tattoo? No.
Of course not.
If she were really that big of a geek, she'd have, like, something dorky like that.
Right. It's like, you know, at the minimum, you know, a Mandalorian skull or something, just real small on the ankle. No, nothing. Yeah.
Let's have quality here. Okay.
Right.
Anyways, let's stop talking about Star Wars. Let's talk about X-Men.
X-Men. Okay.
First of all, I want to get your take. Have you seen all the X-Men movies?
I have seen all the X-Men movies, yes.
What did you like them all? Well, I mean, in general, we don't have to go through each one of them.
Okay.
We don't have that much time. But just in general, what are your thoughts?
In general, the first one I loved. I'm not a huge comic book fan. I mean, I read comic books here and there. That, I mean, we could go on for hours about that. But the first one, you know, I really liked it. It wasn't the literal translation of a comic book, and it brought non-comic people like myself into it, and it was engaging. And I liked it for that. And there were things that were pointed out to me afterwards, like, oh, this is from the comics, that's from the comics, this was a nod to the fans here.
Well, the thing is, what was great about that first one, that one and Spider-Man were really able to reboot the interest in comic books movies simply because they weren't just made for geeks, but they weren't just made for a general audience. They were honest enough to the original source material, but they weren't saddled by it.
Right, and it was similar with the Star Trek reboot. You know, it was enough that, you know, fans were like, okay, great, and, you know, non-fans saw it as a great movie that, you know, it just happened to be Star Trek. But it was the same for the first X-Men with me, where, you know, it had good source material, it brought me in, and it was engaging, and I really liked it. The second one, not so much.
Really? Because that's one that's held up by a lot of people, including me, as being just as good, if not better, than the original.
I mean, I liked it. I just didn't really get into it as much as the first one. Nightcrawler was cool. You know, you got to see the whole teleport BAMF thing, which one of the guys from the cast, CJ, he just loves that effect. You know, he talks about it all the time. let's see. I'm trying to
read. And then, The Last Stand. What were your thoughts on The Last Stand, the third one?
It was just a CG, you know, eye fest. I didn't really care for it at all.
Really? See, I'm one of the few people out there who, whereas like Wolverine, I recognize Wolverine's not that great of a movie. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it, but I'm not going to go out there and defend and be like, no, it was actually really good. I'm like, no, it was crap. But I enjoyed watching it as just sort of that fluffy, nothing summer movie. But X-Men Last Stand, I'm one of the few people in the blogosphere who actually enjoyed that movie, who liked it. Having seen it twice, I saw it on in the theatrical release, I saw it on DVD. I may have to watch it again just to see what my thoughts were on it. But I did like it. I liked the trilogy, so to speak.
I mean, watched them. I've never watched them all back-to-back-to-back.
Yeah.
I saw them in the theater. I have the first one, but I don't own the other two. It's been a very long time since I've actually seen this too. But from what I remember about Last Stand, the thing that I remember most was Wolverine walking up to Jean Grey, you know, towards the end after the Golden Gate Bridge scene,
yeah.
You know, and just everything is flying around and she's destroying everything, and you know he has to go up to her to kill her because he can regenerate, and you know, all his flesh is tearing off and everything, but his hair sticks perfect.
Of course. Well, it's Wolverine.
You know,
it's Hugh Jackman. How can you mess up his hair?
You got perfect hair. Your pants are fine, even though the rest of your clothes are melting away. You know, your skin is just basically melting off your adamantium skull.
Here's the thing. I interpreted that as being Jean Grey said, "I do not want to get in your pants at all."
I never thought about it like that.
And thinks he has fabulous hair. Because she really didn't in that movie. And then Wolverine. Would you agree Wolverine was a big step down?
Wolverine was terrible. I will admit that I actually saw the pre-release that leaked out on the net.
Did you watch it? Did you go watch the finished version?
I didn't. No, because
I wouldn't watch it. I don't watch leaked stuff anyways. I don't like watching stuff. I don't even like watching stuff that I'm sent, like as a screener, like with temp effects for, you know, crap that goes on the Sci-Fi Channel or something.
Right.
I don't like watching that because it's like half it takes you out of the movie. You can't enjoy the movie. Even if it's got crappy special effects as a final one,
mm-hmm.
it's better than temp effect here, fire coming, you know, whatever. And,
right.
I thought that's an unfair assessment of that movie, though.
It might be, but at the same time, I'm not a huge, like I said, I'm not a huge comic book fan, mm-hmm. and I didn't have a whole lot of interest in seeing it in the first place. And yeah. Somebody said, "Oh, hey, I saw that this leaked, and here's the DVD if you want to watch it." And you know, instead of turning them in for piracy.
There's somewhere on that continuum that you could have made another decision. You could have just
right. I could have made a call to the FBI.
Well, I could either watch this or I could call the FBI at them right now.
Right. And in retrospect, I probably should have called the FBI because it was terrible.
Wow. Well, let's talk about the new one, X-Men First Class, which is the latest one and the only one only wide release opening this week. In this one, the origin of Professor X and Magneto mm-hmm. is told against the backdrop of the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Ooh.
It shall be the policy of this nation to regard any nuclear missile launched from Cuba against any nation in the Western Hemisphere as an attack by the Soviet Union on the United States.
You ready for this?
Let's find out.
Listen to me very carefully, my friend. Killing will not bring you peace.
Peace was never an option.
Are you at all interested in seeing this one? I mean,
yes.
Because you said you're not a comic book guy.
No.
And you weren't really, you're sort of blow hot and cold on the X-Men movies, but
yeah,
you still want to see this?
I am. I'm going to go see this weekend with a group of friends. I'm actually kind of excited to see it. The thing that really caught my attention was not the media blitz that they've been putting out about this, because I think the marketing, I just want to say the marketing for this was terrible.
Okay. It's not inspiring.
No. No, I mean, the one sheet that they put out, it's like, okay, so you've got John Hamm up front, okay. Okay, you've got January...
John Hamm's not in this movie.
Who is that? Not John Hamm. Who the hell am I thinking of?
I'm like,
wow.
Wait, what movie did I see?
What movie Maybe are you talking about?
James McAvoy.
Yes, that's who I'm thinking. Why did I say John Hamm? Wow.
Hold on a second. Hold on, wait. We got to go to a break. We'll continue your rage about John Hamm / McAvoy.
Okay.
We'll get back.
42 miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh, yeah.
All right, welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. Chris, you were talking about John Hamm.
John Hamm slash James McAvoy, who...
who is not an X-Men first
who
class.
Is not in the movie, but apparently I think he is.
Well, but his wife, January Jones... Well, his on-screen ex-wife or what... I don't watch Mad Men, so I don't even know what's going on. But January Jones is in the movie.
Yes.
So was that part of the
That's
problem?
Where I was going, yeah. Because you should bring January Jones to the front of that one sheet.
You were so just distracted
I was.
In thought by yeah. January Jones's boobs.
What can I say? You know, I'm a simple guy.
But here's the thing. Before we even talk about the movie,
okay.
January Jones, I don't get the deal with January Jones. Yes, she has fantastic tits. Great. I will give you that. Yeah. I would love to spend a weekend between those. Okay?
Yes.
However... And she's pretty, but she's not gorgeous. Because the thing is, she's sort of attractive, but her eyes are too far apart, and she has this perpetual look of total confusion.
But you see
on her face.
That's where it's like, okay, you can go up to her. She's one of the ones that seems approachable.
She's approachable because she doesn't know how to speak.
Well, that could be
like,
too.
You can walk up to her and be like, "Hey, what's up?" She's like, "I don't know."
But you see, that could be to your advantage later on. You see, and that's why Ashton Kutcher dated her.
Well, Ashton Kutcher dated her also because he's Ashton Kutcher.
Oh yeah,
right. I mean that he had that going for him,
right? You know but he's got the same thing. He's got actually, I've come.
No, no, wait, wait. That's the same thing. He has nothing in common with us except that he has a penis, and
yeah.
I'm pretty sure that his is way more glorious than either.
I don't want to know that.
Well, I'm just assuming. I mean, it's Ashton Kutcher for crying out.
Yeah. He seems to be a smart guy, at least, you know, business sense. He does these TV shows, and, I mean, I'm not saying he's a good actor or anything, but, I mean, he can pull the tail, so.
I like Ashton Kutcher. I think he's a decent actor, and he seems at least in control of his career.
Yes.
Which is a good thing.
Which is more than a lot of actors can say.
Yeah. Which is more than January Jones, because I don't think she's in control of anything except maybe her bladder.
And that might be an if.
Well, yeah. That might be a turn-on, too.
Well, that's a whole other podcast, man.
If you're into that sort of thing.
You could charge for that.
No, but here's the thing. January Jones, I mean, she looks totally stupid. And her, she plays Emma Frost. And, mm-hmm. and I don't know the background. They really haven't developed Emma Frost much in any of the movies. She showed up in, I think, in X2, and she was in Wolverine. But it was all, but she's never been a focus of the characters. In any of the movies, so she's much more focused here. But January Jones is, she's pretty,
yeah.
I mean, she's pretty, but it just completely ends there. And now they've got Rose Byrne in the movie,
right.
And she's very pretty. But my God, that woman needs to eat a sandwich.
Yeah, you're gonna have a little bit of weight,
something with carbs in it, because I literally could see through her, and that was not a mutant superpower. I mean, there's like a scene. It opens up in the scene. She's a CIA agent and sneaks into this. The bad guy's lair in Las Vegas. And she does so by just stripping down her underwear because she's gorgeous. But, I mean, she looks like a 12-year-old boy.
You see, that's just not attractive.
No, she's just way too skinny. I mean, I hated Wicker Park, but she needs to go back to the weight she was when she did Wicker Park because she's just gotten... I mean, if you watch stuff like what Brides... She's been in, like, three movies this year, like Bridesmaids, Insidious, and X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
And she just looks terrible in these.
Well, I mean, she... You see, I haven't seen it first. You said you got
sure.
to see it on a press junket type deal.
No,
right?
no. I just got to see a press screening. They
oh.
didn't take me to any sort of junket.
No, okay.
Trust me, I'm not that important.
But when you were describing that, it reminded me of Fantastic Four with Jessica Alba, where you know she stripped down and then did the invisible thing.
Yeah.
And the funny thing about that, I know this is a tangent, but real quick, when we went to see that, somebody said. So you're going to take Jessica Alba, the hottest girl in Hollywood, and make her the Invisible Woman. That does not make sense at all, which it really didn't.
I will say I like the Fantastic Four movies.
I do too.
I know that gets me in a lot of trouble, especially the second one. And I'll admit the second one's got serious, serious problems with it, but I still thought they were fun.
Yeah, I mean, and that's about where it ended for me. You know, they were just fun popcorn movies, and that's all I really cared about.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
But, no.
Getting back to X-Men.
Yes.
So, I mean, you do have the thing, for example, it does have its problems. It's not flawless.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really amazingly impressive, especially for a fifth movie in a series. And that's what blew my mind. And part of it, a lot of it's the acting, the people they chose. of course, yeah, like you said, Rose Byrne does a decent job in it, but she's just way too skinny. January Jones is awful in it. And James McAvoy's Professor X, you know, I don't know. He does okay, but he just... Well, here's the thing. At the beginning, he falls into this sort of cadence of Jeff Goldblum speaking. And he, like, channels Jeff Goldblum in the beginning. And then, like, through the rest of the movie, he channels Sean Spencer from Psych.
Okay.
You ever, because literally, whenever he uses his powers, he puts two fingers up to his temple. And he's like, I can feel this. And here's the thing. Patrick Stewart never did that.
No.
Never once do you see him put his finger. He's so badass. He just does it without moving his hands.
It's just Patrick Stewart. He doesn't need to do that because, you know, he's a good actor.
Yeah.
The expressions on his face can tell you what he's thinking. You don't
need...
Yeah,
and I mean...
The two fingers to the temple is just, you know... No,
it's a little silly. And it's like all the time. And I'm like, I get that maybe they're trying to be like, well, since he's younger and he's not totally experienced with it. And I get that. That's fine. But I still, it was silly. He doesn't even do that good of an acting. And it was funny is, what's her name? Jennifer Lawrence plays mm-hmm. Mystique in it. And she's a great actor. I've seen her in a couple films and she's fantastic. But she sort of has the Parker Posey effect in this one where Parker Posey, if she's got some bizarre, edgy, strange role, she just soars in it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you put her in something that's just very basic and mainstream, she doesn't do anything with it. And I think that just, she wasn't bad, but she was just sort of like, kind of forgettable.
Really? Because yeah. I kind of like Jennifer Lawrence. And I'm really looking forward to The Hunger Games. So.
Oh, don't even get me started on The Hunger Games. Oh. We have another damn, I don't know anything about it, but I'm just sick of it from casting news already.
Well, yeah, the casting news, they did blow it out, but I
got cast in Hunger Games. I didn't even know until I got the press release. Like, really?
I've been reading the books, and the books are pretty good.
I mean, sure they are. There's nothing against... I've nothing against the books. I just have... I'm just tired. It's like the Dark Knight casting news.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, again, I think I got cast in The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises. And I'm like, because it's like every other day there's like so-and-so joins up. Matthew Modine is going to be in The Dark Knight Rising. I'm like, aren't you filming that now?
Right. And that's how it was with Hunger Games. Even today I saw there was the President Snow was cast today. And I don't even remember who it was now because
Donald
Sutherland. Yes.
See, I know this, and I don't even know who I'm talking about.
I'm talking about an random old dude, and it's just
random old dude. How dare you refer to Donald Sutherland as a random old dude?
Hey, random old dudes are, you know, can be badass. What in the? Apparently, there is a elephant in my house. I'm sorry if you heard that.
Well, that's okay. Why did some? did you get shit upon or something like that?
No, I just heard boom, 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 boom.
Oh wow. Well, that happens.
Yeah.
An elephant is in your house. It's been cast in Hunger Games. And
it has been cast in Hunger Games. We just got the announcement a couple minutes ago.
Wow. anyways, getting back to X-Men First Class.
Yes.
So those are the problems with it in terms of... And I mean, there is the prequel stuff where it is a bit of an origin, and it's just... They do kind of have to... There's constructs to a prequel movie that... You're always going to have problems with. It's the same thing with a sequel. It's always hard to do a sequel or a prequel because there are these certain things you got to hang the plot onto, and it can get awkward getting to those places. With that said, it was a fantastic movie. And although what's funny is I think if they make any more of these, they're going to be taking place in the Civil War because, you know, they did X-Men 2, X-Men The Last Stand, and then Wolverine takes place before X-Men.
Right.
This takes place before Wolverine. The next one's going to have to take place like in World War II with Magneto's mom having sex or something.
That will be a slightly disturbing. But now, you've seen it, so I wanted to ask you, do they make any reference to the Oxcart program?
The Oxcart program.
Yeah, because in the trailer you see, I don't know if it's an A-12 or an SR-71 Blackbird, but you see that as the ship that they use, you know, to get wherever they're going. Now
they have a plane, yes.
Okay.
We're getting way too technical.
Yeah, well, I was a huge jet nerd when I was a kid, and I still am. And I didn't know if they kind of wove that whole, you know.
Here's the thing. They may have.
Okay.
But since I have no idea what you're talking about, okay, I would have completely missed it. There was a plane.
Okay.
I will tell you that.
I'll shut up then.
There is a plane that does some cool shit. That is the other thing was, and here's the only my only other complaint about it is that it does sort of it is saddled by being a movie from the 60s about the 60s that doesn't quite feel like it's the 60s. There's some things where they nailed it in the production design and the outfits, and you're like, that's great. But they use a lot of colloquialisms and some of the hairstyle looks. It looks like, because that's one thing I've always felt Hollywood has finally gotten right over the last maybe 15 years, is when there's a movie that takes place in a different time, they will actually usually do a really good job with production design and hairstyle and that sort of thing. But even this one, you can tell they had an actor, and the actor's like, I'm not cutting my hair. I'm not changing my hairstyle. I'm like, well, that hairstyle's not 1962.
Right, that's 2011, bud. You got to do something with it.
And then there's one scene where a guy says, that's totally badass. And I'm like, I don't think badass was a common term back in 1962.
No, nobody really said that back then. It was more, they might have said bad.
Well, they would have said groovy or far out. That's the kind, they actually have one scene where Professor X or Xavier uses the term groovy, and it's very cheesy. And I get that because, you know, you don't want this to come off like an Austin Powers movie.
Right.
But they do sort of play a little fast and loose with the anachronisms.
Okay.
Again, that's my only other, because like I said, because you could have them be like, far out, because that's totally what they would have said in 1962.
You just
blew shit up.
But at the same time, you know, you're suspending disbelief anyway. That you know,
well, they are mutants.
You've got people who are mutants who can control shit with their minds.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. We're in the middle segment.
Okay.
But overall, it's a great movie. Michael Fassbender's fantastic in it, and he is surprisingly fantastic in it, and he actually elevates the entire movie out of its cheese level, because like I said, you got James McAvoy chewing the scenery, you got January Jones, who's got fantastic boobs but otherwise just sort of like bouncing around the set like right. like a billiard ball, and even Kevin Bacon, who plays the bad guy, is good as the bad guy, but without Michael Fassbender in it to sort of temper him,
mm-hmm.
he would be very cheesy.
And that was my question. I was wondering exactly what role Kevin Bacon played. I'm trying to, you know, stay away and not read too much about it. So I was going to ask what role he's playing.
He plays the bad guy.
Okay.
He's the main villain in it.
Okay.
And I won't say much more. I don't want to give away too much spoilers, because there's a lot of stuff. The second I heard that people were writing articles and tweets about spoilers in the movie,
because mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've heard this, but there were people that were just like, people were getting pissed at other people for spoiling certain things.
Okay.
Which I'm not even going to say what they spoiled. but the second I heard that, I just avoided any sort of contact with that, because I knew I was seeing it early. And so I was like, well, I'll see it when I get a chance to. And there's a lot of stuff happening into it. And there's a lot of neat things and a lot of great things. And what's neat about it is it does, because it's about the Cuban Missile Crisis. And they do actually a fantastic job of weaving in the reasoning behind the Cuban Missile Crisis, how it relates to the mutants, is the best way of saying it.
Really?
I was very impressed. It doesn't just have this backdrop. It's not like, oh, this is going on in the backdrop, and we're going to go do this at the. No, I mean, it's like integral to the story, and I thought that was very clever how they put that together. But like I said, Michael Fassbender, why he was so great in the movie is the same reason why Ian McKellen was so great in the first two X-Men, is he does not approach the role as the potential bad guy. And even though Michael Fassbender, the character of Eric, is not a bad guy in this movie, but you know he eventually becomes Magneto.
Mm-hmm.
Who is then a bad dude.
Right.
But because of the way I think Ian McKellen laid down the character, he does, and this is a great villain, does not see himself as a villain. Darth Vader in Star Wars did not see himself as a bad guy.
Right. Well, at he least saw not himself. At first.
Well, no, even well, I mean, at the very, very end, you know, of Return of the Jedi, but throughout that, he was like, he thought he was doing what was right for the greater good.
Right.
From beginning to end of that series, you know, and you know, that's what a good bad guy does. A good bad guy does not have the I am the bad. Like they used to call him the evil Brotherhood of Mutants, I think, in the books. But way back when, Bryan Singer said, no, they're just going to be the Brotherhood of Mutants because they don't see themselves as being evil. And that makes a good bad guy. And Fassbender plays the role with a lot of empathy and a lot of understanding, and it turns into partly into a revenge story, which is fantastic. And that's what makes the movie work.
Interesting. Well, I'm very interested to see it. And even when the first previews came out, I said, you know, I still want to see this because I've seen all the other ones. Even though, you know, I didn't really care for the last one all that much, I still want to see this, and I've made plans to go see it, and I'm actually kind of excited because I like that time period, you know, the 60s, especially the Cuban Missile Crisis. You know, I've always had a weird fascination with that, and so if that plays into the story very well, that excites me a little bit more.
It's neat. I'll be curious to see what you think. I'm going to give it a fat guy's grade if it totally rocks.
Totally rocks. Okay.
Totally rocks.
Well, if it doesn't totally rock, I'll give you a call and I'll.
You can yell at me.
I'll be like, it did not totally rock.
It did not. It just sort of rocked.
It was only a medium rockish.
Yeah.
It was the Soundgarden of rocking.
Wow. Music reference. Yes, that I don't get.
Well, Soundgarden was. Never mind. They were
terrible. I'm aware that a group exists called Soundgarden.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
We'll just leave that one alone.
Okay. Let's move on to the next thing we want to talk about. People versus George Lucas. You have not had a chance to see this yet, have you?
I have not, no.
Did you know much about the movie?
I know a little bit about it. We tried to contact them when they were shooting, but they never got back to us. So we just kind of lost interest in and moved on.
Like, screw you guys.
Yeah, it's like,
we're the Imperial Holonet Radio.
No, I think that's how they were. They're like, screw you guys.
Because you guys were big fans of just all things Star Wars in a lot of ways, right?
Right. Well, a lot of people said that we were very negative, and we were negative about, you know, some things. But, you know, anybody who is a true fan of anything can nitpick it apart, you know, to death. And we got to that point where a lot of things did get, you know, negative, and we started talking down on George Lucas. But in the end, you know, you've got to remember that it is his movie. He can do what he wants with it, and you can either like it or you can not like it, or you can go give him your another $10 over and over and over, or walk away. And
here's the thing, because one of the things they kind of try to make a case in the movie that the movie is so influential. We're talking Star Wars and then the first trilogy, but in particular Star Wars, the first movie. They try to make the case that because it is so impactful in popular culture, that it's not his movie, that it is owned by the people. Do you agree with that?
I don't. No. Any time a director puts out a movie, it's his or her movie. You know, even if it does have a huge impact like Star Wars did, so did Toy Story. I mean, Toy Story had a big impact. It was the first feature-length CG movie. Mm-hmm. You know, it had a huge impact, especially on, you know, computer people like myself. You know, I want to dig into it more and more and more. It had an impact on me. That still belongs to John Lasseter. It doesn't belong to me. You know, I didn't put any blood, sweat, and tears into any of these movies. So George Lucas has the complete right to do whatever he wants. It as much as I love it, I love to deconstruct it, sit and nitpick about, you know, little things. Oh, did you see Luke's head bounce up in Empire? You know, just every little itty bitty thing that you can think of. I love to just go in and just pick it apart. But it's in the end, it's still George's movie, and he can do what he wants with it.
Yeah. Here's the thing with the people. It was a rather entertaining movie. It was interesting. I knew a couple of people in it. I'm watching the movie, and I'm like, well, I know him. I know her. I'm just like, oh my gosh, you know, all these people popped up in the movie. In fact, one of the writers from Film School Rejects, Adam Sweeney, I think, was who popped up in it for like one like soundbite. So I don't know how long they interviewed him. But here's the thing. I thought it was a neat movie, an interesting movie, although I thought it would have been more relevant if it would have come out 5 years.
Yeah, and...
Because here's the thing. By this point, yes, Han shot first.
Of course. I mean,
fuck over it. The movie came out... The version where Greedo shoots first came out 14 years ago, people.
Yeah, but I mean, that's one of those...
years.
It's just one of those things that people love to nitpick about, you know, and they've gone back and they fixed, you know, quote, fixed it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people have written papers on, you know, Han shooting first establishes him as the badass, but if Greedo shoots first, then, you know, Han's the softy. It's like, really, get over it.
I don't think, because the thing is, he was drawn and ready to go. And I don't,
right.
I think it's overthinking it. And what there are some things in the edits or the fixing of the first trilogies, the quote unquote fixing of the first trilogy, that you're like, well, that was clunky even as a fix. Like even if you wanted Greedo to shoot first, it did. You just didn't have the footage.
Right.
So, okay.
And it didn't fit at all.
And that's the only reason it bothered me. It had nothing to do with character. Han shot first. Oh my gosh. I'm just like, it just looked a little odd. Same thing with the Jabba scene. It wasn't very well acted. And they even have Gary Kurtz come in and talk about the fact that then they replayed the information in the Greedo scene. And I'm like, yeah, but so what? He shot it with the intent of using it. So he used it. Big, big freaking deal.
Right.
And him standing on his tail. Okay. That was a little bit cheesy, but who cares?
Right.
And if you actually watch the original Star Wars without the edits, there's some real weird shit going on in that movie anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it was the 70s, so you had weird, weird stuff going on. You know, you had the weird hairstyles, but also it was, at the time, it was an independent film.
That's right, yeah.
You know, so you've always got crazy stuff going on an independent film set.
And all the complaints about the new, because of course they have this whole thing about how much they hate Jar Jar, and I'm like, yeah, Jar Jar was annoying. Okay, fine.
Right.
But you know what? The Ewoks, every complaint people had about Jar Jar.
People had about the Ewoks.
They had about the Ewoks at the time it happened. Yep. I was 12 when that came out. I freaking loved the Ewoks. I watch it now and I'm like, yeah, they're teddy bears.
Right. You're like, okay, they're miniature Chewbaccas, and you know they were going to do a planet of Wookiees, and it's like, okay, so you got teddy bears running around that, you know, just happen to have traps set up at the exact height of an AT-ST, ready to smash it. Okay, but they're cute teddy bears. So
I don't. It's because for me, it's just like these were a lot of old arguments, and that was what bothered me. That's why I was like, man, if it would have made 5 years ago, like right after Sith came out, I would have been like, okay, you at least were on the ball. But this, it took so long for it to come out that at this point, you're just like, wow, some of these arguments are a decade old,
if not more.
Or more, yeah, like the Han shot first thing. So, I mean, it was interesting, and the whole thing, like, George Lucas raped my childhood, I'm like, just get over it.
Right, people who shout that online, you know, go away. Stop, okay, if George Lucas raped your childhood, then stop reading about it, stop commenting about it, stop giving him money, and he'll go away. Sorry.
Oh, my gosh. Somebody's really pissed off at George Lucas.
That's my killer attack dog. Who?
That is your Wookiee. Is that the elephant or the Wookiee in the background?
That's the Wookiee in the background. Wow. Sorry. Hang on a second.
No, that's cool. That's cool. That's cool. I'm sure somebody's just walking by the...
Somebody's walking a dog outside.
Somebody's walking by Echo Base. So, well... No, but... And that's the thing. I mean, I have respect for the guys who did The People versus George Lucas. Yes. They did a good job with the movie. It did rehash a bunch of old arguments, and but again, I love Star Wars. I loved all six movies, and I'll be the first to say there's some weird shit and bad stuff going on in almost every movie. Actually, all the movies. A lot of people hold up like Empire as this great, brilliant, untouchable thing, but I'm like, well, you got the whole time differential where you know they're gone for a weekend and Luke's gone for 6 months.
Right.
Yet the timelines all match up and no one ever changes their clothes.
Right. Nobody blinks an eye. It's like, hey, where was Luke for all this time? Oh, well, he was with this little green frog dude. Okay.
Yeah. And you've got some bad dialogue. You've got C-3PO quoting the odds, which he never does in any of the other movies ever.
Right.
So there's some silly stuff going on. In that movie, and the thing is, like with the special editions, mm-hmm. in Return of the Jedi. By the time he did Return of the Jedi, he pretty much had the clout to do whatever he wanted to. So the only things, you have a couple explosion effects, and of course Anakin Skywalker at the end. But aside from that, it's just the Sai Snoodles thing, and people like rage about that. I'm like, have you watched the original Sai Snoodles?
Yeah, it was
that
little puppet.
That is redonkulous.
The little mouth is opening just a little bit here and there. It's like, okay, that...
You can see the string in the original version, and it's Sai Snoodles never was cool.
No.
So no. Whatever they did, they have that wrapping, I don't know, potato bug or whatever that thing is. It's no worse than Sai Snoodles.
No, it's not. And that was one of the things that I was okay with, you know, the big change. It's like, okay, you go to the Jedi Rock song... You got Sai Snoodles walking around singing. Okay, that's cool, because the original sucked.
Yeah.
So that's no good.
Max Rebo, what the hell was that? Seriously?
I'm a blue
They ran elephant. Out of ideas when yeah. they got to Max Rebo. I mean, he wasn't an elephant. He looks like a gummy bear.
Sort of, yeah.
With a snout.
Yeah, you know, it's like they threw a dart at a board. Like, okay, we're going to take blue. Boom. Okay, we need two animals to cross. Let's go with elephant and dog. Boom.
I think what they did with Max Rebo was they said, all right, and we spent all this. We got these Gamorrean guards, and we got the little Salacious Crumb, and they've got Bib Fortuna. They got all these great creature designs, and they like ran out of the budget, and they were terrified to ask Lucas for more money, and so they just said, "Give me a lump of clay, boom, right. boom, boom." There we go.
And we're gonna put a blue tarp over it.
And it got approved, and they're like, "Well, we're not screwing with that."
Right. Hey, George said it's all right, so we're done. We're out. We got our money. He got his money. Let's go.
Yeah. So, yeah. I'd be curious to see what your take is on it if you can get a chance to check it out, because as a Star Wars fan, I love Star Wars, but it does overly. It puts too much. Again, it is just a series of films.
Right, and like I said, you know, I've got Boba Fett on my desktop right now. I've got, yeah. you know, the sideshow Boba Fett right next to me. I'm a big Boba Fett fan, by the way.
You've been going on, you're like, I think you're going to kidnap Megan Fox and tattoo that Mandalorian armor on her or something.
Well, I mean, my license plate is Jedi 79. I've got a Mandalorian skull on the back of my car.
You know what? I used to live next to a guy whose license plate was like Jedi 99.
Really?
And he would like park, we still know them, but he would park. Sometimes he'd take the spot my wife wanted. She'd walk in the house. She's just that goddamn Jedi.
No, I've got assigned parking here, so hopefully I'm not pissing too many people off. But you know, a lot of people, you know, at least the listeners that were in Columbus, you know, knew my license plate and would see me around, and they'd know if I was at a movie theater. Like, oh hey, there's Jedi 79. Chris is here, so. Yeah. But I've had that license plate for quite a while now.
Mm, cool. All right, let's move on. I think we've said enough about People vs. George Lucas. Let's talk about box office from this last weekend.
Okay.
Of course, the big winner. I have a hat that I need to eat.
What's that?
Well, I told somebody that if Kung Fu Panda loses to The Hangover, I'd eat my hat.
Oh, dude, you should not have said that.
I am going to get a hat made out of chocolate.
Well, okay, then it's okay, but I wouldn't have put Kung Fu Panda up against Hangover. I knew that Hangover was going to do good. I didn't think it was going to do $100 million. It would do $103.
Yeah.
I didn't think it would do that. I play the Hollywood Stock Exchange online.
Yeah.
And I was actually betting against Hangover doing $90 million.
Yeah.
And I thought that Kung Fu Panda would do at least 80.
I thought Kung Fu Panda would do better. I think, and I've said this before, and there's some evidence pointing out to it. I think the not 3D, I'm repeating myself, so people have heard me say this. Mm-hmm. It's not the fact that these movies are in 3D, it's the fact that they cost $5 more.
Right.
That's what's causing people. Because Kung Fu Panda, you'd bring kids to.
Right.
I got five people in my family, my wife and me and three kids. If we went to see Kung Fu Panda, we could take the kids to Kung Fu Panda and it would cost us like $100, where we could take them to the Hangover for a lot less.
Now, they might be slightly scarred afterwards, but
they'd be like, what is that? We'll explain to you later. But I do think that the higher ticket prices, not 3D. I don't think people are running away from it. It's not that they don't think it's gimmick. I just think we're in a recession, for fuck's sake.
Right, exactly.
And they cost more. So
yeah, and I'm not paying the extra ticket price unless it's, you know, something that I really want to see in 3D. Like Tron Legacy, I wanted to see it in 3D. Yeah. So I paid the extra for that. There are not many movies that I will see in
3D. I'll tell you this. If Tron Legacy, I saw it at a press screening, so of course I didn't pay. Mm-hmm. But I would have gone and seen it. I would have actually gone and seen it again if I wouldn't have had to pay $15 for it.
And I think I paid $12 or $13
yeah.
because I watched the FOMAX, as I call it.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've probably gone into that a couple of times. But the whole IMAX, the fake IMAX 3D, I ponied up for it for Tron Legacy. It was awesome. Toy Story 3 I saw in 3D. Unfortunately, didn't add too much to it. So I'm kind of on the fence with 3Ds. It's like
I love 3D. I just don't. It's there's very few movies that I would even as a consumer pay that right. much more. But if it was like a buck more, just put a buck more. I think they'd do better. I think they're just seeing the impact of it, because I think the other thing that's happening is both Kung Fu, because what happened was you had Thor. Now Thor's pretty much out of the 3D screens. It's into the 2D screens right. at a lot of these theaters. So if you wanted to wait, you could wait now. Kung Fu Panda might be exclusively in 3D, but once Green Lantern comes out, it's going to be moved out of everything. And you're right.
And you're going to be back to 2D now. Kung Fu Panda, if I could get a deal on it, I would see it in 3D, but I'm not rushing right out to see it in 3D. You know,
animation is actually good on a lot
of yeah. I like the... Like I said, I went and saw Toy Story. Unfortunately, the 3D didn't add much. But I mean, I love the first Kung Fu Panda, so two. You know, I'm definitely going to see it at some point.
I just thought that The Hangover would lose steam quicker, because the thing is, I didn't think it was not that good of a movie, especially compared to the first. It really wasn't. And I've heard the people who are like, oh, it was great, it was hilarious. But generally, the people I've talked to, most people are like, yeah, it wasn't that good.
No, it wasn't. I mean, it was pretty much a shot for shot recreation of the first.
Yeah,
you know, down to the stupid little song in the boat, you know.
Yeah, well, that was yeah. It was just like let's just have him sing something. Let's give him a guitar.
Now, I mean, I only laughed, you know, uncontrollably, I think, once, and that was during the credits and the next to last picture. You know how they do the pictures.
Yeah,
and it was Brad Cooper shooting Ken Chow in the head.
Ken Jeong.
Yeah, Jeong. Yeah. And they were doing a recreation of an Eddie Adams picture from Vietnam.
Yeah.
And I lost it. I was cracking up so loud, nobody else was laughing. And
of course.
And my friend who went to see it with me, he's like, dude, what was so funny about that picture?
They didn't recognize that as a recreation?
No.
I'm ashamed of people now.
Yeah. And I mean, apparently nobody else did either, because I'm laughing like, you know, an idiot. And everybody's like, okay, what's this guy laughing at? And it's just a picture. And I showed it to my friend. He was like, oh, my God. And I was like, well, here's the video that goes along with it. And he was like, oh, my God.
Here's the thing with the box office for Hangover 2. It did very well, although it was very front-loaded Thursday and Friday. What it made Thursday and Friday, it then doubled throughout more Memorial Weekend, just about a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
They've made enough money from this movie that it's they're of course already working on Hangover 3.
Yeah, they hired.
I'm very curious.
I'm sorry.
I'm very curious to see what this is going to turn into. Are they going to just say, well, we're going to take them. They're going to go to Dubai now. That would be great. Have them go to Dubai and get killed.
That would be funny. But the thing is, Justin Bartha, he was not in any of the press materials for anything.
He
wasn't in much in the movie, but. You know, he was still in it. You know, he's still part of it, but it's like they didn't want to mess up the dynamic that the other three had.
Oh, yeah, so, no, it was just them as the wolf pack, yeah.
Right, so they're like, oh, let's just keep him at the resort. How can we do that? You know, and they came up with some lame excuse, and I'm like, I feel bad for that dude, but at the same time, you know, he was probably shooting for, 3 days, and it was like, okay, I got my $20 million, I'm going home.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's the thing, I'd be curious to see. I'm very curious to see what happens with Hangover Part 3, because you know they're going to do it.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be curious to see whether they're just going to do the retread, be like, because, you know, Hollywood's, you know, it worked last time, let's do it again.
Let's do it again until, you know, nobody pays to see it anymore.
Yeah, and it's like, let's put it, it's not going to be a monkey, it's not going to be a baby, it's going to be, I don't know, whatever, a wookalar. and then, but it's going to cost $150 million to make. And at what point does it overblow itself? And... That's what I'm really curious about. I'm like, hey, good for them. They made the money. It's a shit movie, but you know, oh well. Then Kung Fu Panda came in, and then Pirates came in. And a lot of people were like, oh, Pirates sunk the second weekend. I'm like, well, it only dropped 45% actually, and it's doing ridiculous overseas.
Yeah, I saw that it's just killing it overseas. I mean, it already made its budget back just overseas, didn't it?
Oh, it's like it's at over $600 million.
Yeah.
Worldwide.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. They're going to make 16 more of them.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing. What's funny? I saw a story where they're talking about, which is not. This has always been the case, but they're like, oh, movies are now being made for the global audience. In a lot of some of these movies, like the Pirates movies, as long as they do well, like 2012, that movie did okay in the U.S., killed overseas. It went crazy overseas. So. that's how they're now basing movies. And as they should, because they're going to look at the global box office. Right. That's the full return of it. Whereas in the past, sometimes, a lot of times, it's, if they can make their money in America, then whatever's overseas is gravy. But for these huge blockbusters, the overseas movies do so much well, which is why, like, Pirates is going to be ultimately way more profitable than even The Hangover, because I saw the thing where it was like Hangover 137 million and 190 million worldwide, and I'm like, that's really not that big of a of an international. It's not bad, you know, 60 right. million international overhaul, but it's a very American movie, so it doesn't reach that global market, whereas like Pirates does. Anything with Johnny Depp in it is going to do well overseas, because they just they go for the stars a lot of times.
Right. Well, I have to make a confession. I've never seen any of the Pirates movies.
Oh, shame on you.
I know. And that's what everybody says. But honestly, I'm just not into the whole Pirates thing. You know, Pirates just, it's like, eh. And I've never seen any of them. People are like, oh, you got to watch them. You got to watch them. They're so great.
Well, I don't know. That was actually one of my things I was complaining about last time was, I don't think people love the Pirates movies the way people think they love the pirate movies, because the second and third one had some real problems, and the third one kind of was received very softly. Again, it's the same thing if you talk the Star Wars thing, where mm-hmm. everyone remembers Star Wars and Empire and then Jedi, you know, and you could see that it kind of turned into this toy franchise by the end, but everyone always like lumps Jedi in with Star Wars, and I'm like, well, there, a lot happened over those 6 years.
Right, right.
So,
well,
here I am trying to make everything about Star Wars, just to reach you.
I'm sorry. I mean, Jedi, you're right. It did become a toy franchise pretty much by Empire. Because by the time they said, okay, we'll mail away for this unreleased figure that you haven't even seen yet.
I mailed away for my Bossk, by the way.
Did you?
I got two of them in the mail.
Nice. Do you still have them?
Somewhere.
Are they still on the card?
Are you kidding me? I was a kid. I played with the damn things.
Okay, well,
I don't do collectibles. For me, I'm like, because I think it's completely stupid. I apologize if I'm offending anyone.
Oh no, I mean, I collect stuff, but I'm not a hardcore collector like, you know, some other people that I know.
Yeah, I mean, and part of it is I look at it because I got kids, and my kids, they get toys and stuff like I got my son the Tron Light Cycle, and of course he takes it out of the box, he wants to play with it because he's a kid,
right?
And would that thing might be worth something later? And probably not now, because it's sort of like comic books have lost any of their value because they make so many prints and everybody's collecting them that they buy them and buy them in a bag, so. The real rarity is no longer there anymore.
Right. Same thing with all the toys that they mass produce, you know, billions of. Oh, yeah. You know, it's like, okay, that you've got this, you know, Darth Maul character from episode one. It's like, oh, you can't find it anywhere, but they still made 367 billion of them, and there's probably 3 million sitting in a warehouse somewhere that they're just going to burn.
Yeah. Or they're like, well, there's that Darth Maul, but they made 8 other versions of him.
Right. It's like, oh, he has a slightly more crooked line on his face on this one, and the paint job is different on this one. It's like, dude, shut up. Yeah. Just look at the toy. Play with it. If you don't want to play with it, put it in your room somewhere.
Yeah. So what do you think is going to do this weekend? I'm assuming X-Men's going to win.
I think it's going to win probably by a long shot. My official fat guy at the movies box office prediction would be 74 million.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I 70s, 80s. Hangover 2 is going to do well. But see, the thing is, a lot of people look at it that 139 million, but they got to remember that was a 5-day spread.
Right.
Hangover made 80 some million for the Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And so I think that's what you got to look at as to what the drop's going to be next week. So I think it's going to drop 40, 50%. So it's good for probably 40, 50 million. But I still think X-Men's going to clobber.
Oh, yeah.
It's X-Men getting great reviews. A lot of people are excited.
Yeah, X-Men's going to take it over, but I think Hangover's going to do a little bit less than that. I'm thinking 25, 30.
I'd love to see it do a lot less. I'd love to see it drop and sink like a stone. I mean, it's doing well throughout the week, though, but we'll see. It's not competing, really, with the X-Men, so whereas it would be competing with, like, Fast Five or Bridesmaids, those kind of movies.
Right, and I think it's going to be a kids' catch-up weekend. Because, you know, kids aren't going to want to go see X-Men Hangover, nothing like that. So I think Kung Fu Panda is going to make up a little bit of ground. It's not going to do huge numbers, but I think it might pull in another 20.
Kung Fu Panda is going to, it's good for at least 30, I think. Kung Fu Panda, I think, is going to have better staying power, and I think you're going to see it sustain once Green Lantern opens, because once it goes into the 2D screens and people aren't going to have to pay $15 a ticket, then I think you're going to get a lot of people catching up on movies. This is actually going to be a year that August is going to be very strong.
Yes, I agree.
I think you're going to get a lot of people catching up on movies that are already out, because we actually saw that happen with How to Train Your Dragon last year, where people just ended up catching that throughout the year,
right,
especially in the low weeks.
And that's what I did with Source Code. I waited almost a month to see Source Code. And, you know, I really wanted to go see it. I didn't get a chance to. And I was like, oh, hey, I'm free for a couple hours. I'm going to go check out Source Code.
Wow.
And, you know, I saw it with, like, three other people in the theater.
It's a great movie.
Oh, yeah, it was pretty good. I liked it. I'm not a huge Jake Gyllenhaal fan, but it was a good movie. I kind of like the quote, repeat movies, like Vantage Point, you know, something along those lines.
Vantage Point or
Groundhog's Day.
Groundhog Day. Did you ever see the original 12:01 p.m.? Not the full length feature with Jonathan Silverman. The original like short film.
No.
With Kurtwood Smith. That's a great short film. If you ever get a chance to see it, 12:01 p.m.
12:01 p.m. I'll check it out.
Movie. It's like 15 minutes long. They showed it at one of those movie marathons I go to.
Oh, okay.
But before we move on, let's talk about the Fat Guy 5. We don't want to do... We've done all these superhero versions of the Fat Guy 5, and we got more coming up, I'm sure, when Green Lantern and Captain America come out. So we had to do a little bit of a different take. We talked about this once. I wrote an article about this on Film School Rejects back in, I think when Iron Man came out, right around then, the first one. But we're going to talk about a couple of these things. Five superheroes who need their own movie, since they're always doing all these superhero movies. Some of those, and even though these are pretty much all mine, because you don't really read comics.
Right, but I've heard of them, and I wanted to start out with Plastic Man.
Yes.
One on your list. Mm-hmm. And I don't see how this would work as a movie. It's like, it's almost like a Stretch Armstrong movie. I don't see how it would work. And then you've got, you know, the Fantastic Four.
They did a cartoon with Plastic Man. You don't see how it would work as a story?
Well, I don't see it capturing people's attention for, you know, 120 minutes.
Well, but part of Plastic Man is the character. Because Plastic Man was a bad guy who then got malformed and he became a good guy. His character is very goofy and silly. So I think even back in the comic book days, even back in the 40s, it was a little bit more lighthearted. That's why I think it would be neat to do, because I like a good, you know, straightforward, lighthearted superhero movie. Everything doesn't have to be The Dark Knight.
This is true. I guess if it was just a fun movie, it was short, you know, maybe 70 minutes.
I don't know, 70 minutes, Jesus Christ. It's like, well... As long as I don't have to pee in the middle of it.
Right. You know, if it takes long enough that I have to go and pee, then I'm out.
Okay. Good to know. the next one I want to put on the list is the She-Hulk, which honestly I never read, but I used to have a Marvel screensaver on my computer, my old Macintosh Quadra 605.
Oh, Quadra, yes. Yeah, I'm a big Mac guy, so...
Classic. Yeah. It's a paperweight now. It had... I think it had 20 megabytes on its hard drive.
Wow.
Or 65 megabytes, something like that. It's like literally I have files bigger than that now.
Yeah. I mean, just the amount of computing power that you carry around on your phone.
Oh, yeah. But She-Hulk, I just love the fact of just a roaringly hot woman in the Hulk outfit. Just I want to see it for the boobies and the sex appeal more than
anything else. Didn't they try that recently on TV with Wonder Woman and it just got
canned? TV it was on TV. Two, did you see completely stupid outfit she wore? And three, it was David E. Kelly.
Okay,
David E. Kelly. I mean, we're talking Picket Fences and Ally McBeal. That's not Wonder Woman material.
This is also true, but I mean, yeah, I'm glad I got shit canned.
Yeah. So the next one is Clayface. This is not an actual hero. It's a villain in the Batman universe, but because we have the whole Nolan verse and it's much more based in realism, as much as you can with a guy dressing up as a bat. Right. But Clayface was basically a shapeshifter. Well, there was actually three versions of him. My favorite was Clayface 2, where he was like the liquid metal Terminator, only he was made of clay, and he could shift from one thing to the other. And I would love to see them start doing movies where they did movies about the villains, not like Catwoman. Mm-hmm. Let me preface that again and say, again, not like Catwoman.
Oh, come on. You know you like the leather outfit.
That was a turd of a movie. I'm sorry. But I would love to see it because there's some great villains out there that could use its own movie, and sometimes it's the heroes just as a side story. Arguably, you know, like even though Dark Knight had a lot going on in it, it was a lot of times the Joker's movie. And, I mean, I think a Doctor Doom movie would be a great movie.
I would agree. I would love to see, you know, a movie that actually centers around the dark character thinking that he's doing good, yeah. You know, like we were talking about earlier, and just show it from his point of view that, you know, the good guys are always trying to attack him for no reason. It's like, what? I'm just trying to make the world a better place, and, you know, here come the Fantastic Four to kick somebody's ass.
Yeah. No, I think that would be fun. So I think Clayface would make a great villain. Another one is Deadman or the Spectre. Either one. These are DC comic heroes that are ethereal creatures. The Spectre is, of course, he's like a ghost-like thing, and Deadman is, of course, a guy who's dead. But there are very bizarre stories that would work great. And, of course, it's all Warner Brothers because those are DC characters. But I think it'd be neat. That would be something I'd love to see done by, like Magnet releasing, you know? Something that would be not – that they I don't want to see them spend – $200 million on a Deadman movie. I'd love to see them spend $30 million on a Deadman movie.
Well, anytime they take any type of comic book property anymore, they try to make it a $150, $200 million movie.
And it works for, I mean, it works for the big heroes. I mean, it works for Superman, Batman, Green Lantern. Well, hopefully Green Lantern.
Right, you but know, you take Deadman, you know. And yeah. I've never even heard of that guy. I mean, I'm not That's a big great. Comic book reader, but yeah. It really, Deadman, if you said Deadman, like, what, are you talking about Dark City or something? I don't know what you're talking about here.
Deadman's a great, great, bizarre, just off-kilter superhero that I wish they'd... And again, he would not work with... I mean, it'd be neat to see a $200 million movie, but it would end up looking... And it would be like Constantine, which was shit, which was based on Hellblazer, actually, which is a DC property. So there's that. The last one, I'd love to see a crossover movie of Aquaman versus the Submariner, or Submariner, whatever the hell. I don't know how you say it.
Submariner.
Namor. Isn't his Mariner. Name Namor? Namorius?
Sure, let's go with that.
George.
I'll vote for Bob.
Well, yeah, because they're both kings of the ocean. And I think they've done comics with them as crossovers, but I'd love to see that. I'd also love to see a crossover movie. They would never be able to do it. You know, I would love to see Superman versus Spider-Man. You know, or Batman versus Spider-Man. That would be a little more.
There was a lot of speculation when I Am Legend came out because they had that poster Superman, in Times Square, you know, Superman versus Batman.
I've never been big on the Superman. I've never been big on Superman versus anybody because really the only thing you have is if you either have to get your hands on some kryptonite or you just have to take advantage of Superman's niceness.
Yeah, and I mean you're not, like you said, you're not going to kill Superman without kryptonite. So Superman versus
Superman.
Right, Superman versus Batman. It's like, okay, so you got some expensive toys, but you know, bullets bounce off this dude. So what are you
Superman?
Do?
Batman versus Green Arrow would be way more realistic.
I've never read the Green Arrow. Sorry. Anyway. Sorry, I just blew your entire argument right there.
On that, oh, the people know. Anyways, we better go to a break. When we get back, we will finish up with DVDs.
Alrighty. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. My name is Chris, here with Kevin. Yay. And yay. And here we are for the DVD roundup.
The world famous. The world famous DVD round.
DVD round. Sorry, I forgot the word.
We actually didn't
part.
Get as blue in the last segment as we have in the last couple episodes. My apologies to the fans out there who expect me to make a lot of dirty jokes. Less dirty jokes this time. Not sure why.
We can go back and edit some in if you want.
I'm sure. Trust me. I'm sure I'll make it up at some point. anyways, let's talk about DVDs. There were a couple ones you wanted to mention.
I did. I wanted to mention the Stanley Kubrick collection.
Yes.
And American Graffiti. Of course, American Graffiti.
Oh, it's just because it's George Lucas, right?
It's George Lucas, you know, and Harrison Ford. But, I mean, still a good movie. And, it basically...
It's out on Blu-ray. It's getting its first Blu-ray release.
Yes, it's getting its first Blu-ray release, and I'm kind of excited, so I might go pick that up at Best Buy this weekend.
And isn't it, you know, I haven't seen it. I've got it sitting there. I have to watch it. But isn't it basically just a bunch of Luke Skywalkers tinkering with their car and then driving around and shooting womp rats?
Yes. In 1962? That's pretty much exactly what it is. But, you know, it made enough money to bring us Star Wars, so yeah. I'll allow it.
It's basically the prequel of Luke Skywalker's life, with only not in space.
Not in space. It's set in, you know, Modesto, California. Hmm. Or whatever California. I'm just saying that's where George Lucas was from.
Wherever George Lucas grew up.
The Stanley Kubrick collection.
Yeah. First time on Blu-ray for a bunch of his films.
Yep. You know, I love Eyes Wide Shut. Hmm. Of course, you know, Nicole Kidman.
Surprised that you stampeded toward that one as your favorite. That's few people put that as their top Kubrick movie.
You know, a lot of people, you know, when it came out, and even now, are like, "Oh, this movie's terrible. It's terrible." I think it's ahead of its time. You know, a lot of people in America, you know, still are kind of repressed about the whole, you know, watching people have sex on film type deal. It's not a big deal. You know, it's like a
5-minute scene. I mean,
right? You know, and it wasn't that big of a deal, but you know, the whole infidelity type. Themes through it, and I just don't think that, you know, audiences are willing to accept that just yet. Yeah. But I think they will, you know, later down the line.
At least I'm hoping so.
I hope so, because, you know, I'm gonna look like a real pervert in that movie theater.
Wow.
That was a joke, by the way.
I hope so. Wow. My favorite Stanley Kubrick movie is Clockwork Orange, actually.
Wow. That's my second favorite, yes.
Just because it's so out there and it's ahead of its time. It's what's bizarre about this actual particular movie is it's ridiculously ahead of its time, yet utterly steeped in its own era.
I would agree with that.
It reeks of the 70s. It reeks of the 70s, but it's a futuristic movie and you totally buy it.
And you really do. And, I mean, you got to give props to David Prowse.
Yes, another Star Wars connection. Yes, David Prowse.
But, I mean, just the ultra-violence. And, I mean, it was banned in...
Everywhere
for how long? And, you know, new generations are coming in and seeing it, you know, after the banning was up. And now it's out on Blu-ray. And I think it will introduce a new generation to Kubrick and that movie in particular.
I also have to say that it was just the Clockwork Orange. It was notorious for having that X rating, and it's relatively tame now. But it's still a fantastic movie. And I recently read the book, which is very hard to read. Actually, I read about half of it, and then I went and I got the recorded book. It's much easier to listen to because it's all Cockney slang.
Right.
And I think that the better experience is listening to it than reading it, because you spend so much time trying to decode what's being said, whereas it's a little easier to decode it by just listening.
Doesn't it actually have like a dictionary in the back?
I think so, but it's all that rhyming slang. It's that British rhyming slang. And what's interesting is if you want to listen to Anthony Burgess actually add a talk about... Another George Lucas connection. He went back and wrote an ending to it that softens the character a lot, and that upset a lot of people. Or it didn't get published. I forget what it was. Something with the ending where it didn't get published in certain versions, and it ends where the movie ends, which is really grim and terrifying. But they published like a there's an epilogue to it where he's like turned into an adult and he kind of simmered down. He's like, "Oh, that was my crazy youth when I was raping people and killing them."
Okay, I'm glad that the movie cut off where it did, because that would just ruin the whole thing.
Yep. See, George Lucas isn't the only one who does that sort of thing.
Right.
Other ones, Drive Angry is out on DVD, which is a great movie if you love grindhouse films. And I love Charlotte Ross in this movie. She's naked. There's also Psych Season 4, starring Professor X. putting his fingers to his temple. And SGU, Stargate Universe Season 2. Did you ever watch Stargate Universe? We only got about a minute left, real quick.
No, never watched
it. Did you ever watch any of the Stargates?
I watched the original movie.
Okay. I did not like the Stargate Universe, but I'll give it props for getting that second season and finishing it out, although I only watched like 10 minutes of the second season because I hated it. But The Stinker is Rookie Blue Season 1, only for the reason, I'm only saying that as a stinker because I'm taking the advice of Meryl Barr, my co-host on The Idiot Boxer, saying that it was, in fact, a terrible show. But the review wrap-up, we have X-Men First Class, which I said totally rocks, and you didn't see.
I have not seen it yet, but I will.
Yes, and then next week we're going to be talking Judy Moody and the Not Bummer Summer Super 8, and we will also probably be talking a little bit about Tree of Life so people can start to hate me. All those Malick-loving filmmakers or film fans can hate me.
Can't wait for Super 8.
Yes. Thank you, Chris, for being on the show. And
thanks for having me.
Yeah, we will talk to you later.
All right.